This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. government officials are warning of the ramifications at the southern border with Mexico starting Friday after the expiration of a pandemic-era policy known as Title 42 that kept out many asylum seekers. VOA Steve Herman reports. We'll have that report for you coming up here shortly and possibly the next hour. And from Steve Herman.
Authorities are bracing for what they expect will be a tremendous strain on personnel and facilities from a surge of migrants crossing the border. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on the White House briefing room podium just hours before the lifting of a policy that blocked migrants from entering the country during the coronavirus pandemic made a direct appeal to those thinking of or already heading north. Mayorkas added that migrant families who fail asylum screening under the new regulations will generally be removed within 30 days. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Searching for a budget deal amid the debt ceiling standoff, U.S. President Joe Biden says saving unspent COVID money is on the table. Changes in rules for big developments, budget caps, other ideas were all in the mix as negotiators from the White House and Congress met Thursday for another round of closed talks. And Sudan's warring parties signed a commitment late Thursday on guidelines for allowing humanitarian assistance, according to U.S. officials. Representatives of the army and paramilitary forces who have been fighting for nearly a month signed the agreement, and Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, on a declaration of commitment to protect civilians of Sudan, a U.S. official involved in the talk said. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers now reports on the Russian-Ukraine war air defenses.
UK Defence Secretary Ben Wallace told lawmakers in the House of Commons that Britain is donating Storm Shadow missiles to the embattled country. The weaponry is known to be able to strike deep with a range of more than 150 miles. The air-launched missiles would allow Ukrainian forces to target locations well behind the front line, including in Russia-occupied Crimea. Wallace made the announcement as Kyiv said it had delayed a long-expected spring counteroffensive while awaiting the delivery of more Western weapons. Karen Chamas, London.
Australia's trade minister is in Beijing to urge China to ease sweeping import restrictions. Human rights and national security disputes prompted China to impose trade strikes on a range of Australian exports in 2020. VOA's Phil Mercer has the story.
Bilateral ties were strained by various geopolitical issues, including Australia's condemnation of China's treatment of pro-democracy campaigners in Hong Kong and its Uyghur Muslim minority. Relations have improved since the election almost a year ago of a left-leaning government in Canberra. Analysts say Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Indonesia last November was a key breakthrough. China is Australia's biggest trading partner. Government data shows that the two-way trade in goods between Australia and China was worth $194 billion in 2022. Phil Mercer for VOA News. Sydney.
Elon Musk says he has found a new CEO to lead Twitter. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Months after he bought Twitter last year, Musk said he would resign as CEO as soon as he found someone foolish enough to take the job. In a tweet, Musk says he has found a CEO for Twitter, or X Corp as it's now called. He did not name the person, but said she will be starting in about 6 months. The Tesla billionaire also said his role will transition to being Twitter's executive chairman and chief technology officer. In a conversation with Twitter followers late last year, Elon Musk said anyone who would want the CEO job must like pain a lot to run a company that has been, in his words, in the fast lane to bankruptcy. I'm Ed Donahue.
Palestinian militants have fired hundreds of rockets from Gaza Strip into Israel while Israel is pressing ahead with a series of airstrikes that killed 23 Palestinians, including three senior militants and at least 10 civilians. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
progress, but no ceasefire in Sudan as the United Nations raises the alarm on international human rights violations.
The international community is steadfast in its support of the people of Sudan and their struggle for freedom, peace, and justice.
Plus, the United States braces for a migrant surge at the southern border.
Officials say the search of migrants from around the world has increased, and even more are expected after pandemic-era border restrictions known as Title 42 come to an end.
And Ghana is encouraging African Americans to connect with their African roots. Today is Friday, May 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. The UN Human Rights Council narrowly passed a Western-backed motion Thursday to increase monitoring of human rights abuses in Sudan since a bloody conflict erupted last month. No African country voted in favor of the initiative. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk.
Both sides have trampled international humanitarian law, notably the principles of distinction, proportionality, and precaution. The Sudanese military has launched attacks in densely occupied civilian areas, including airstrikes. Last week, one airstrike reportedly hit the vicinity of a hospital in the East Nile area of Khartoum, killing several civilians. The RSF, meanwhile, has allegedly taken over numerous buildings in Khartoum to use as operational bases, evicting residents and launching attacks from densely inhabited urban areas.
The UN body urged countries with influence in Africa to help end the conflict in Sudan after reported progress in truce talks between the army and the rival paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Michelle Taylor, permanent U.S. representative to the United Nations in Geneva.
This is the moment to send a clear message to the parties of the conflict that the world is watching and expects them to deliver for the people of Sudan. Parties to the conflict need to ensure safe humanitarian access and the protection of civilians. And here at the HRC, we have a duty to help make that more likely.
Sudan's warring factions early on Friday did commit to protect civilians and the movement of humanitarian aid, but did not agree to a ceasefire and reportedly still remain far apart. And as the crisis grows more dire by the day, a UN internal estimate predicts Sudan's crisis will see 5 million more people needing emergency aid, just as vital international funding for UN humanitarian appeals is dropping off. David Doyle with Reuters has more.
Halima Yacoub Ishaq fled Sudan's violence with her five children. 4 days after arriving in neighboring Chad, they're yet to receive any assistance.
We are totally dependent on the food given to us by the Chadian families in the next village. We have small children and we can't go to work and leave them alone to starve.
While aid agencies are rushing to distribute food and register new arrivals, resources are tight. And the situation looks to get much worse. Parts of Africa were already facing a deepening set of crises, from drought to floods, as well as a growing list of armed conflicts. The demand for life-saving humanitarian assistance has been growing. Now, after conflict erupted between Sudan's army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, an additional 5 million people in Sudan will need emergency assistance. That's according to an internal UN estimate that said half of them would be children. By October, some 860,000 people are expected to have fled to neighboring countries, including Chad, which has its own dire humanitarian crisis. But just as demand is escalating, resources are being diminished. Analysis of UN funding data for Africa shows financial support from key donor governments is dropping off. That's on a continent that was already facing a $17 billion funding gap for UN humanitarian appeals even before the latest crisis. Here's the World Food Programme's executive director, Cindy McCain, during a visit to Somalia this month.
There is going to be less funding this year. I pray there won't be, but the reality of it is that there is going to be less. And so we're going to have to work on doing more with less.
Aid workers, diplomats and donor government officials say funding gaps are likely to grow. That's as Europe focuses on the war in Ukraine, post-Brexit Britain turns inward, and some lawmakers in the United States target budget cuts. Meanwhile, desperation is growing among Sudan's refugees. On Sunday, Chadian soldiers used whips to beat back dozens of women grabbing provisions in one border village. But every day, hundreds more trek across desert scrubland and dry riverbeds to reach Chad's border, seeking safety. Sat in a rare patch of shade, surrounded by other refugees, Isaac says they're hoping Sudan's crisis can end soon so they can return home. If not, they will go to look for work. We have orphaned children here, she says, and no one is thinking of how we feed them.
That was David Doyle with Reuters reporting. U.S. government officials are warning of the ramifications at the southern border with Mexico starting Friday after the expiration of a pandemic-era policy that kept out many asylum seekers. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman reports from Washington that authorities are bracing for what they expect will be a tremendous strain on personnel and facilities from a surge of migrants crossing the border.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on the White House briefing room podium just hours before the lifting of a policy that blocked migrants from entering the country during the coronavirus pandemic made a direct appeal to those thinking of or already heading north.
Do not risk your life and your life savings only to be removed from the United States if and when you arrive here.
Mayorkas added that migrant families who fail asylum screening under the new regulations will generally be removed within 30 days. The Biden administration faces criticism from both the political left, which says the government is now taking too harsh an approach to migration, and conservatives, who predict overwhelmed and unprepared U.S. officials will resort to a mass release of migrants. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Russia's defense ministry on Thursday denied reports that Ukrainian forces had broken through in various places along the front lines and said the military situation was under control. Ukraine's president has said that his country's military needs more time to prepare for a counteroffensive against Russia. Associated Press correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
In an interview with the BBC, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that it would be unacceptable to launch the assault now because too many lives would be lost. A Ukrainian fight back against Russia's invasion has been expected for weeks. Ukraine is receiving advanced Western weapons, including tanks and air defenses, and Western training for its troops as it gears up for an expected assault. With Russian forces deeply entrenched in many parts of eastern Ukraine, Kyiv's counteroffensive would likely face minefields, anti-tank ditches, and other obstacles. I'm Karen Chamas.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Israel carried out airstrikes overnight in the Gaza Strip, including one early Thursday, according to the Israeli military, which said it killed the head of Islamic Jihad's rocket squad. The strikes came amid a multi-day burst of violence with Israeli raids in the West Bank and cross-border rocket fire from Palestinian militants. Indonesian President Joko Widodo Thursday acknowledged that no progress has been made to end the deadly violence in Myanmar. He said the assessment during the final day of a two-day summit of leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. And Pakistan's Supreme Court on Thursday ordered the release of former Prime Minister Imran Khan, whose arrest on corruption charges earlier this week sparked a wave of violence across the country by his supporters. After the ruling, Khan left the court in a heavily protected motorcade for a secure location. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The National Science Foundation's Carl G. Jansky Very Large Array, or VLA, has joined the SETI Institute's search of the cosmos for extraterrestrial intelligence. The VLA is considered to be one of the world's most powerful radio astronomy observatories. As the VLA conducts its regular observations, a copy of its data will also be sent to COSMIC, a new processing system at SETI that will analyze the information to detect types of radio emissions that can only be made with manufactured transmitters. Receiving these signals could indicate the existence of a technically advanced society. This new collaboration, headed by the SETI Institute, includes the National Radio Astronomy Observatory and the Breakthrough Listen Initiative. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan faces his biggest electoral challenge Sunday, with a country recovering from deadly earthquakes, an economic crisis, and a united opposition under the leadership of Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, who is vowing democratic reform. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
Turkey's largest and newest warship is on display in front of the palace of the country's old Ottoman rulers. The ship features prominently in President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's campaign, a symbol of the growing regional power of Turkey in a dangerous neighborhood. Osman Sir, director of Panorama, TR Research Company.
Regarding the defense industry, regarding economy, regarding reconstruction and rehabilitation at the earthquake region, and showing a very strong foreign policy discourse with this, you know, a strong statement he wants to show to the public. And he will try to show that I am the man who can run the country under such a very, you know, with the crisis period, international instability.
Erdogan's strongman image is in stark contrast to his main challenger, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, a bookish retired civil servant who advocates consensus rather than confrontation and polarization, often addressing the nation from his kitchen table on YouTube. Again, Osman Sert of Panorama, TR Research Company.
So what is important, you know, Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu's, you know, political stance itself. Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu is, during the last, you know, 5 years at least, he is trying to, you know, build bridge between the different segments of the country.
Kılıçdaroğlu has built a broad coalition of six parties, including secularists, Islamists and former Erdogan ministers, on a platform of democratic reform and a return to parliamentary democracy. The election is taking place in the aftermath of February's deadly earthquakes, which claimed over 50,000 lives and saw heavy criticism of the government's response. But many see 40% plus inflation and a cost of living crisis as the most important issues in these polls. That is how Sezin Öner of Politikyol News Portal sees it.
It's of course the economy. Economy is the number one issue. Everyone has slid at least one class. All the socioeconomic classes have gone down. So everybody is feeling the bite of the economic crisis.
Erdogan's two-decade rule of his AKP party saw the emergence of the new, powerful conservative middle class, which observers say has remained loyal until now. Political scientist Zeynep Alamdar of Istanbul's Okan University.
The AKP has a very, you know, very, very solidified, you know, and old age electorate from whom they've been getting votes for a very, very long time, and to whom they have been distributing the riches.
Voters on Sunday face a choice between two men of sharply different character and vision for the future of Turkey, in a poll widely predicted to be the closest in decades. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Meanwhile, also on Sunday, voters in Thailand will head to the polls in an election pitting pro-democracy opposition parties against conservative military generals and their allies who've run the country for nearly a decade. One party surprising pollsters and lighting up social media is Move Forward, which has a platform calling for major political and economic reforms. Bazitra Dwangdi reports for VOA from Bangkok.
This human rights lawyer hopes Thailand's May 14 vote will bring the pro-democracy Move Forward party into government. Sasinan Thamnitinan, popularly known as Lawyer Jammy, is a political newcomer running for a seat representing Bangkok. Move Forward says it wants to get the military out of Thai politics and make the country a fairer, more equal place. Jammy hopes that message might just be enough to cause an upset, especially if the 4 million first-time young voters get behind the party.
This election is very, very important for the Thai people, because I hope that in this election will change our country, will change about the politics in Thailand. I hope that in the 10 years in the future for my kids, they will grow up in the country. This is the real democracy.
In 2019, Move Forward, then called Future Forward, won 80 seats in the National Assembly, becoming a rival to populist parties loyal to ex-premier Thaksin Shinawat for the party's young radical agenda to break monopoly businesses, demilitarized politics, and weaken Thailand's top royal defamation law, which shields the monarchy from all criticism, was seen as a threat to Thailand's elite. The party was dissolved, and its charismatic leader, Thanathorn Chungrungrungkit, banned from political office for a decade, sparking mass protests. The party has rebranded as Move Forward. Its current leader, Pita Limjalanrat, a Harvard-educated business executive, says they're the only ones addressing national concerns.
We're not really fully democratic in the sense that the country has been militarized for a very long time, so that the power structure as well as national budgets that's being focused on this militarized country, parliament, government, you know. The second thing is on the monopoly. We've been monopolized for a long time, so that the inequality of the money in our pocket is not so much bad luck, but it's structurally inherited in our economic structure.
The polls show his party in strong second place behind Pheu Thai, a populist party that has long challenged the conservative establishment, helmed by Pathongthan Shinawat, the daughter of the party's founder. Move Forward's proposed reforms contrast with what Pheu Thai offers, which is a mix of populist handouts for the poor and old-style patronage politics. But with 40% of voters aged under 42, Lawyer Jammy says change for Thailand could be stalled, but not stopped. Wichitradungdi for VOA News, Bangkok.
Ghana has been encouraging African Americans to move to the West African nation since 2019, urging them to connect with their African roots and also to invest in the country. American Chaz Kaiser has built a support system helping fellow African Americans, especially women, settle in Ghana and to nurture their ideas for business. Sinanu Tord reports from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
Chaz Kaiser first arrived in Ghana in 2016 while serving in the U.S. diplomatic corps. 3 years later, she relocated to the West African country with her then 4-year-old daughter.
I came because I realized just the enormous opportunity there is, especially for Black Americans, in terms of entrepreneurship and building businesses in Ghana, and because I just thought it would be an awesome place for my daughter to grow up.
Kaiser was joined by her family in 2020 and launched businesses soon after. She has seen an influx of African Americans moving to Ghana and wants it to continue.
So there's so many women, especially so many Black women, who want to visit Ghana. But the first question they have is it safe? Yes, it's safe. So I wanted to provide a safe and soft landing pad for Black women wanting to experience Ghana and wanting to network and meet new people. And I wanted to make it as easy as possible.
Kaiser's social enterprise, Serenity House Ghana, provides accommodation, counseling, and workspaces for solo women travelers looking for spaces to rest, work, and learn. A patron of the facility is wellness practitioner Simone Hardy from Chicago. She is looking to relocate to Ghana in June to launch her online business. She says she wanted to get away from America's gun violence.
There's mass shootings. I know people personally who have been in mass shootings. You know, it's
it's not a safe place. And especially for us as African Americans, we don't feel safe. So we are also searching for that void. And the peace, the serenity that you will find in Ghana, it's, you know, it's not something that you're going to experience in the U.S.
While official numbers have not been provided, diaspora groups say thousands of Americans have immigrated to the country in recent years. The Diaspora Affairs Office says newcomers have ventured into a wide range of business fields, including technology, real estate, transportation, and entertainment. The Ghanaian government says it is providing incentives for immigrants to live and invest in the West African country. Akwesi Ewa Abibio is the director for Ghana's Diaspora Affairs.
Give them the same opportunities in terms of access to land, in terms of opportunities to do business, everything. Give them that citizenship. That will enable them to know that they are also Ghanaians.
In a region troubled by coups, Ghana has been an oasis of stability, holding elections every 4 years with smooth transfer of power. Ghana's government says it hopes an influx of African-American immigrants will boost the country's economic vitality.
The exposure that they have been given, their intelligence, their network back home to enable us to, you know, help out in our development. So that socioeconomic development and everything that we talk about is all embodied and encapsulated in this approach.
Kaiser says she hopes more black women like herself will respond to Ghana's appeal. Sena Anutot for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
This has been International Edition on Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair Taib, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you being here. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of the only areas of cooperation between Moscow and Kyiv after Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine is the Black Sea Grain Initiative, or BSGI, brokered by the United Nations and Turkey and signed by Russia and Ukraine in July 2022. The BSGI allows the export of grain and fertilizer from three Ukrainian Black Sea ports. To implement the deal, a joint coordination center was established in Istanbul, made up of representatives from Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the United Nations. State Department Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel called the initiative a vital tool to combat global food insecurity and stabilize food prices. Over 9 months, the initiative has moved 28 million tons of food onto the global market. The UN has emphasized that the grain coming from Ukrainian ports benefits people in need, helps calm markets, and aids in limiting food price inflation. A recent communique by the agricultural ministers of the G7 countries recognized the critical importance of the BSGI, saying we strongly support the extension, full implementation, and expansion of the BSGI. They also called on Russia to stop threatening global food supplies and allow the Black Sea Grain Initiative to operate at its maximum potential and indefinitely. Instead, Russia has indicated it may walk away from the initiative. Russian inspectors in Istanbul have stopped registering outbound vessels for required inspection plans. They have also engaged in slowdowns of inspections leading to a backlog of outgoing and incoming vessels. After the G7 meeting, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said, Russia is again blocking Ukraine's grain from reaching the world, spiking food prices for people everywhere. For the last few days, no ships have gotten out of Ukraine, and more than 50 have been blocked from going in to load up. Countries around the world depend on this life-saving grain. Russia is breaking its promises to them. In addition, Russia has complained that it has not received the benefits it expected to get for its own exports after it signed the BSGI, and has indicated it may not extend the deal beyond its scheduled expiration date of May 18th. State Department spokesperson Patel said, as the G7 foreign ministers made clear in their communique, Russia must stop using the world's food as a weapon in its war on Ukraine and allow the Black Sea Grain Initiative to operate at its maximum potential. Ukrainian grain should reach the world unimpeded.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.